Hey, what's happening, everybody? You're listening to another episode of the Super Mercado Bros Video Game Music Podcast.
Thank you so much for joining us. This is the podcast where we share and discuss the very best in video game music. My name is Carl Brueggemann.
And I'm his brother, Will Brueggemann.
And I have my normal mic back this week.
I am so comfortable. We're recording in the same room, but last time Carl got to be on the couch and I was in the chair, but now I am on the couch and
I was not comfortable last time because I forgot my mic and I had to use a different one and it didn't have a pop filter, so we had to wrangle up this crazy
setup. Oh, we should have
taken
a picture.
No, we shouldn't have. Guys, I'm really excited today. We're going to be
playing... Do you think other, podcasts 220 episodes in are doing the same kind of makeshift garbage that we have?
No, absolutely not. It was only because I forgot my mic. So today we're going to be playing music from video games released in 1988. This is a very big year, not just because it was the year I was born, which is the coolest thing about this year.
Yeah.
This is a huge year in video game music. So this is the third time we've done an episode topic like this. The first one we did was 1991, which we kind of said was probably, if you had to pick one year, it's probably the best year in video game music. Hard to argue against that. 94 we did next. This is 1988, and there is an argument to be made for this year. This is a pretty huge year. We're not going to give away all the games released in 1988, but what we are going to do is talk about some of the runner-ups, some of the honorable mentions. So it'll just let you know, these are all the games that we had to cut today. So Altered Beast, King's Quest IV, RoboCop, Forgotten Worlds, King's Valley 2, Last Ninja 2, Space Harrier 2,
so all those wonderful
Fantasy Zone the Maze.
All those wonderful soundtracks you're not going to be hearing today. So
exactly.
Look forward to that.
Yeah, so what you're hearing today is just the cream of the crop. Playing up top, you guys, I'm sure, all know what that was. That was Ninja Gaiden for the NES, and that was composed by Kaiji Yamagishi and Ryuichi Nida, and that was released in 1988.
So one thing that we do have to mention, this is our, like Carl mentioned, this is our third time of doing a spotlight on a specific year in video game history. Is that, I think it took a few tries for us to really establish, what are the rules we're going by. We may have made a couple mistakes in the other ones or just inconsistencies with what we're playing. But this time, make no mistake, it's 1988 for the original release date. So before we would do things where, some of them were released in Japan and some of them in the U.S. and we kind of stretched the truth just to have
the
best playlists.
Yeah.
But this is definitely
accurate. I think it makes sense. Original release date is what you should do because some games came out in Japan first. Some games came out in U.S. first. So I think original release date makes sense. So in 1988, there were people somewhere in the world that was enjoying this music.
Yeah, when they were, when they graced people with their presence here on Earth, that is when...
Sure. So, okay, let's get into it because we got some wonderful music to play today. We started with Ninja Gaiden and we're going to move on to Final Fantasy II. Was released in 1988. It was first released on the Famicom in Japan on December 17th, 1988, just barely making today's episode. So with that, let's play a beautiful theme called, I think this is the theme of the village. Yes, the village theme composed by Nobuo Uematsu. I don't believe we've ever played this particular melody. Will, correct me if I'm wrong. The village theme from Final Fantasy II. You're listening to the village theme from Final Fantasy II, originally released for the Famicom. This was composed by Nobuo Uematsu. It's kind of crazy that we've never played this theme before. They're kind of some go-to tracks that we seem to play more often from these NES titles. We last year had an episode, Final Fantasy 1-3, where we played all three of the NES games, and this particular track we didn't include. It's really hard because there's so many wonderful pieces of music. I'm a really big fan of the cave theme. It's probably one of my favorites for this game.
Yeah, well, anything that kind of explores some unique harmonies. He just has such a wonderful imagination, I feel. And really, I mean, you can make an argument that the original NES soundtracks, or in this case Famicom, are some of the most musically interesting. I mean, I don't think that's an opinion a lot of people would outwardly hold, but especially when you're considering the limitations, the early mm-hmm. Final Fantasy soundtracks are just so exquisite and really unlike a lot of other stuff at that time.
There's so much craft in the melodies, like particularly the way that he uses counterpoint and voice leading in the NES here is just one of the strongest examples of that kind of thing where you're taking the classical influence, you're applying it to make something fresh and new, you know,
sure.
Because like this music doesn't feel just classical. It feels like has a classical influence, but it's injected with, part of that is just Uematsu's style that it's kind of inescapable, but he's injecting it with a little bit of a modern flair.
Sure.
And I think that kind of traditional music is just the go-to thing for RPGs. Like something about music from this era, and even older, you know, a lot of times you get medieval influence too. I don't know why, but it works so well for these RPG games, and so many composers would go back to that type of thing. And Uematsu was one of the first people tasked with, you know, composing that type of a game.
I think what I like about him as a composer is it's never cliche. Whether you like the piece or not, he's not operating with the same kind of, I don't know, stock and trade musical tools that I think a lot of functional composers deal with, where it's like, oh, it's this kind of song. Like with mm-hmm. a lot of Uematsu stuff, whether you like it or not, it's very unique, and he has his own specific voice.
I agree
with what you meant about some classical influence but also new. To me, that's just the marriage of, like, I don't know, him borrowing from the things that he's learned, but always retaining his own identity.
Which I think
identity.
Is a sign of a good composer. So,
yeah, I mean, this piece is very, like, pastoral. I don't know, it almost sounds like, if it is like classical music, it'd be more like something like Holst or Ray Vaughan
sure.
Williams or something.
And it does has some sort of a very humble, earthy quality to it. When
sure.
we think about a village, you know, a village is a very small, humble place. And, you know, village themes in video games always have this tone, a very sweet, simple, pure type of a feel. And that's definitely what we get here. You know, whether it's Zelda or, you know, it doesn't matter what the series is, village themes always have a similar type of a genre. So what's crazy is this was only a year after the first Final Fantasy. That was in 87. This comes out almost a year to the day in 88. But the original wouldn't be released on the NES in North America until 1990. So we were very delayed. It took us a while to get into the Final Fantasy stuff. So let's move on to Blaster Master. Man, such a classic
Sunsoft
piece of music here.
Game,
Sunsoft,
yeah.
We're going to play, of course we're going to play Area 1, because we want to try to make the best possible playlist today from 1988, really showcasing this year. This
is such a classic. I don't think we've played this on the podcast since the very early days of the show.
It's been a long time, yeah. And anytime I hear this, it kind of makes me think of Legacy Music Hour, because they always play in with this track every single episode.
Oh, wow, I forgot about that.
This was composed by Naoki Kadaka. It's Area 1 from Blaster Master. Enjoy. We'll be right back. interesting form there. It takes about 1 minute and 10 seconds before the true loop comes back. That's pretty long for the NES in this era. You guys are listening to the classic piece of music, Area 1 from Blaster Master, composed by Naoki Kadaka. Just a little bit of a warning, we're going to be having a Kadaka episode coming up probably early next season.
This is one of the most classic NES pieces, in my opinion.
It totally is.
It's just so great that the intro is just so exciting and building up. And once you get into that wonderful chord sequence that borrows from sort of Mixolydian and everything, I don't know, it just, to me, listening to it, it's perfect for this episode. It just takes you right back to the world of the 1980s.
It definitely does.
I mean, there's hints in this piece that remind me of Mega Man, that remind me of Metroid, that remind me of other, you know, Japanese composed video game soundtracks. But Naoki Kadaka, to me, he's just one of those great Japanese composers who's so timeless and versatile that you can't necessarily identify always a specific compositional sound. You just know that, like, oh, his name is responsible for all these classic soundtracks, but it's not exactly, you listen to it and it's like,
that's
oh,
true.
That's classic
yeah.
Kadaka.
He has,
he's just super talented.
He has
versatile.
A consistent level of quality. It's almost like the Kadaka seal of approval. When you find that seal, you're like, okay, I know this is going to be good.
Totally. Well, to me, someone who's like that is Yoko Shimomura. I mean, I think nowadays she's used for sort of a similar thing, but when I think of, you know, I mean, the two biggest examples, like Street Fighter versus Kingdom Hearts, like they don't sound like they're by the same composer at all, but she's just this powerhouse, you know, she can write all these phenomenal
themes. Well, it's also interesting too, because this is really a little bit earlier than Kadaka's, like, kind of classic stuff that we, when I think about his name, I think about things like Journey to Silius and Batman Return of the Joker. So this is a little bit before those titles, where he would use a lot more advanced aspects
DPCM
of the chip.
Base,
you know?
And everything.
So this is a little bit more standard use of the NES sound chip, but it's, oh my gosh, such a classic piece of music. Already this playlist is, you know, nothing but superstars, and we're going to keep that going. So shouldn't be surprising that we have a lot of NES music today. We also have a few arcade tracks, which makes sense when we think about the year 1988. That was just almost the peak of popularity for arcades, and tons of wonderful arcade games were released this year.
Well, because it's really before, I mean, I think the advent of the 16-bit console generation is kind of like the initial decline. At least the first wave of decline for the arcades, where they had to start utilizing more gimmicky technology to lure people.
Well, it's interesting,
back to
the arcades. If our topic was 1989, the landscape would be changed. We'd have a lot more Genesis entries, because in the US that was when the Genesis was released. So we don't really have any Super Nintendo or Genesis entries today. So as good as this year is, it's good because of the NES and the arcade for the most part,
which is great. You know, it feels like it's been a while since we've done kind of an 8-bit centric episode.
So let's move on to an arcade game. This came out in 1988. It was Ghouls and Ghosts,
oh,
the
classic.
Sequel, right, to Ghosts and Goblins.
Yes.
So this soundtrack was composed by Tamayo Kawamoto, who, she's a great composer that I remember there was a time when we were trying to figure out who actually composed that, the main stage one theme,
and it wasn't her, it was the previous composer.
Right. So this is a track that was composed by Kawamoto. It's exclusive to this game. It's stage two. It's a wonderful piece of music that I used to think it was a Tim Fallon composition, because he did the, I think, the Amiga version of it. He did a different version of this game, but this was originally featured in the arcade, composed by Kawamoto. It's stage two, The Village of Decay. Delightful piece of music. I kind of want to say a little bit of a hidden gem. I don't know how many people are familiar with this theme.
This is
so good.
This is probably the most sophisticated piece of video game music written in 1988.
It probably definitely imagine, for the arcade.
I mean, right at the I'm like, oh, it's doing the kind of Gaelic folk music thing that we hear all the time in video game music. But
it's
then
ahead
when
of
you
its
start
time.
To hear the amazing counterpoint that happens,
right?
And kind of the fact that you have those elements that it doesn't just sound like a hack job of that. You know, it's not just like going for something contrapuntal. It's really expertly crafted.
Well, it's worth mentioning
but it
that
also harmonically is so interesting and pushes boundaries.
Well, I think
the
reason why it's so ahead of its time in 1988 is because with the arcade they have more channels, so this couldn't have been done on the NES. This is the only place in 1988 in the video game world that this piece of music could have been done accurately. And you know,
I think
it's so
but
wonderful,
even after those kind of limitations are broke down, I mean, this piece is incredibly unique. As I mean, for someone who loves video game music and loves the history of game music, I mean, if I heard something like this nowadays with real instruments, I mean, I'd be singing its praises.
I think one of the reasons why that kind of music is so exciting is because this really, in the scheme of things, isn't any older than it was in 1988, because it's going back to such an old era.
Sure.
That whether it's 2016, 1988, it feels just as fresh as it did then. It doesn't, this, you know, when you go back to those old eras, you're able to kind of make something that doesn't date itself. You know, this is so much more timeless than a piece of like PS1 era music.
What's
you know?
Crazy about this to me, though, it almost sounds like, I don't know, when like a John Williams or Jerry Goldsmith is evoking an older era, it often sounds like this, where there's rhythmic and melodic elements that feel like they're evoking like a pastiche, but harmonically it's much more rich and advanced and it's distinctly, you know, contemporary.
Mm-hmm.
But oftentimes in video games, I feel like we tend to be a little bit more tongue-in-cheek when we're evoking the past. And so I think the biggest example of that is like all the Gaelic folk music kind of sounding stuff or the medieval stuff. It's done in full earnestness or it's like mixed with rock. But to have something like this where you have elements of that, but with this really contemporary harmony, I mean, that's just why I feel like this piece is so sophisticated.
It's very
for its
fresh.
Time.
And that's one of the reasons why it kind of feels like it's a hidden gem is because
yeah.
I know I had heard not this version. I don't think I've ever heard this original arcade version of Ghouls and Ghosts, but I heard the Tim Fallon version, and for some reason I kind of in that context didn't hear all the parts in the same way, and I just didn't give it the time of day as much. But hearing this here, this is just an incredibly composed piece of music, and now that I'm hearing it, it's so clear to me that this was by a Japanese composer. It doesn't sound really like something that Tim Fallon would ever be interested in doing, really. I mean, he converted the music to this game and did write original pieces. There are original Fallon compositions in that version he worked on, but this is not such an example of that. So really wonderful stuff. All right, this is crazy, but we're moving on to Mega Man 2. The year is 1988, right? So it's just absolutely
just there
insane.
Alone, this
yeah,
wins,
it's
like,
just
best year
move
ever.
On to this little-known game, Mega Man 2. We're going to play Metal Man stage for you today. This game was composed by Takashi Tateshi. This is Metal Man from Mega Man 2. Exciting. So many reasons why this game was so pioneering. We're going to talk mostly about, obviously, the music today. This is Metal Man stage from Mega Man 2. Takashi Tateshi really brought a new level of energy to not just the Mega Man series, but video game music. You know, the NES has all these harsh limitations, but the way that he's able to convey a full band with different sections that are orchestrated, that are coming in, coming out, different sections have their time to shine. You have like this little thing that sounds like a guitar riff. That sounds like what the guitar would be playing while a vocalist is singing. And you have this level of kind of layered weird sounds.
Well, it's just the imagination that takes place with this kind of stuff is so great. It makes you wish you could go back to a time when you had such harsh limitations that, you know, you had to imagine, you know, this is a guitar, this is a bass. But what's so wonderful to me about my favorite retro soundtracks, you know, you think about your Mega Man 2s and your Mario 3s and Sonic the Hedgehog. So, the, you know, the ultimate classics, Castlevania, what have you. It's not just that it's impressive for its limitations or that it's good music under limitations, but it's that every single voice, every single note, every aspect about it is such an incredible work of art. It goes beyond words. I mean, this is why, to me, Mega Man 2 is completely different from all the other Mega Man games. Because, yeah, there's other catchy tunes and there's other good rocking stuff. But, like, when you listen to this piece, every single note has so much thought and intention behind it. I mean, just listening to that bass line, it's so brilliant because it takes... That bass line is not just filling out, you know... chord information and doing it so in a groovy way. It's taking the melodic motif that this piece is based around in building the whole bass line around it. I mean, I don't know. It's so kind of brilliant because the melody goes da 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 da. It's about those two notes, and the bass line is just built off of those two intervals. So it'll do it here, it'll do it up there, and it's like, I don't know, that kind of attention to detail, or I guess just love and craft and passion is something that makes, to me, like, the very best video game soundtracks stand above the ones that are just, you know,
but,
pretty darn good.
There's something about that recipe, that stirring all those specific things in the pot that we get in Mega Man 2 that we literally don't get anywhere else in video game music. And what's so frustrating is that it's this gentleman who kind of dropped off the face of the earth and kind of quit game composing after not much longer than 1988. It was a few years, you know, he joined Konami for a little bit and then he kind of quit. So it's really, it's kind of sad, but it's also beautiful that this is always going to live, you know, this is always going to live on. And really, out of almost any soundtrack, Mega Man 2 is universally loved. Everybody knows these themes. Anyone could sing these on command. I think technically when you listen to this track now, at least for me, the thing that I'm additionally impressed by is how he's able to use that second pulse channel. It's switching so quickly and so smoothly between an underneath counterline, a harmony, delay back to the counterline, and it's doing it so fast that most people would never notice it.
And I think when you listen to it on headphones, you can start to hear kind of the seams of when it's changing. But to those of us who grew up playing this game, it feels just so natural and it never strikes your mind. You know, I agree with you, Carl. There's something almost sacred about all the music to this game, not just because it's so great and it's so beloved, but also because Takashi Tateshi stopped composing. It's almost like, you know, you think of like Harper Lee, the author of To Kill a Mockingbird, how up until, you know, recently when they uncovered that new manuscript, like
that
book was so special because there was nothing else to compare it to. She didn't do any other work. So, you know, after a while of not having that and it being in the past, it almost like there's something sacred about artists that only give you a small contribution because
it's rare too.
It's really precious.
Usually when we think about those talented artists, they give us a lot. So now we're going to move on to another arcade soundtrack. This is Gradius 2. And this was what I was talking about a couple weeks ago, where there's two separate versions. Now, the arcade version was the only one released in 1988. The Famicom was released, I think, a little bit later. I could be wrong about that, but we're going to play the arcade original version. And this is a track called Burning Heat. It's one of the most beloved of the series, I would say. Burning Heat, which is stage one, and this version of the soundtrack has a lot of people that worked on it. We have Shinji Tasaka, Motowaki Furukawa, Kenichi Matsubara, and finally Saichi Fukami. So let's take a listen to Burning Heat from Gradius 2. this piece just comes in, comes out, it does what it needs to do so quickly and efficiently. Very short loop, but it just leaves you wanting more. This is Burning Heat from Gradius 2 arcade version here. Such a wonderful melody, and I think the best thing about this track is that incredible groove. Boom, boom, ka, boom, 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 ka, boom, 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 ka. It's such a wonderful driving beat. And again, it has the it evokes the feeling of flight with the melody and the harmonies, but the beat is just so just driving.
Yeah. Also, what's so great about this piece, I mean, Carl, you mentioned the groove, but the distinct sound of Japanese pop harmony in here, which to me, I almost have this connotation with flying. I mean, we've mentioned, you know, we played stuff from Life Force, you know, Miki Higashino, kind of traits, but this
who's
piece,
not here this time,
it kind of right this piece reminds me of almost like Sonic 2, like Sky Chase Zone or other, you know, Japanese composers. I don't know, somehow I don't know what it is about flying, but it just kind of connotes all of these musical techniques and styles,
specific
that
techniques
are,
you know,
specific to Japanese.
One thing that we
music.
Hear in this series a lot is the flat 6, flat 7 to major 1.
Right.
That type of a movement,
well, I mean,
is something
all over video
it's
games.
It's just, but specifically the way that they use it in this series, that is one of the ways that evokes the feeling of flight.
Sure.
Because it's just kind of this, I mean, really
that was
triumphant
right there in that Blaster Master track. That to me, I think of that as kind of like a Nintendo-y video game,
right,
Japanese kind of a move.
Well, that is wonderful. Man, we're going to keep the wonderful tunes going here. We're going to move on to something a little bit lesser known because, you know, it's not only classics today. There were games that were a little bit lesser known that also had good music. Will, do you remember this game, Super Dodgeball?
Oh, yeah.
For the NES, not for the SNES.
Well, I mean, I didn't like play it as a kid because I was born in 1995.
I forget that. Okay, so this was composed by Kazuo Sawa, and we're going to play a nice piece of music called USSR. So it's the theme of USSR from Super Dodgeball. Enjoy. Efficient little NES piece of music there. That is the USSR theme from Super Dodgeball. That was composed by Kazuo Sawa. So great. I love how the way that it's trying to evoke the Russian folk song elements.
It's doing a really wonderful
job. It's doing a really wonderful job, but it's so fun. It's such a fun piece of music. It's very lively and spirited.
Well, that's another thing I miss about old video game music is like the, I don't know, harmonically when they're evoking a sound, or we talked about this before, but like a cliche that's intentional, they'll do it really on the nose, but as far as the rhythms and presentation, it's still sort of packaged as this pop rock kind of a thing. It's something that I love about old video games because I don't know, there's some it's similar to how you have to approach the games, where you're really encouraged to use your imagination a lot. You know, I don't think a lot of things are meant to be taken literally. I mean,
well,
you think about
like
the way that you experience games and power-ups, and there's a lot of things representing what they're supposed to be, and I feel like the music is very similar in
that way.
It's
like a larger-than-life cartoon version, like,
right,
especially when you think about all these games in the late 80s, early 90s that had different country themes, even something Street Fighter 2, you know, it's all, like, cartoony, you know? It's like this caricature of USSR. You know, it's like someone else's impression of, oh, yeah, I'm going to try to make a piece of music that sounds like that. And that's wonderful. You know, it's just very kind of getting specific cliches and I don't know, it's kind of leading you in directions that, you know, this composer wouldn't have written the song if it wasn't for this use. Like, oh, we need a theme for the USSR. So then he specifically used those Russian folk song elements and created a fun piece of music.
Yeah, in terms of how it's harmonized, I think it's super, super spot on.
Really fun. Well, now we're going to move on to a great soundtrack. This is Galaxy Force. Originally came out for the arcade. We featured a wonderful track a couple weeks ago from Galaxy Force 2, which features some of the same music. This was released in 88, and it was composed by Katsuhiro Hayashi and Koichi Namiki. We're going to play a different track today. This is A Lone Fighter, arcade version here of Galaxy Force. Wonderful piece of music. You guys are listening to A Lone Fighter from the arcade version of Galaxy Force, which was released in May of 1988. This came out in 88, not only in Japan, but also in the US. This was ported to the Master System later, I think even the Genesis. There was that version called Galaxy Force 2, which came out for the arcade as well. But most of the music was actually featured in this original game. This, again, is A Lone Fighter.
You know, it's interesting, going back in time and focusing on 1988, for some reason I'm finding myself looking back on this past year and just some of the amazing, you know, opportunities that we've had and things that we've done. I mean, as we approach the end of this, what is it, our ninth season?
I think it is our ninth season. Crazy.
Unbelievable to me. And I mean, we're so excited
over 4 years
for next week, our season finale.
Yeah,
you
it's
guys will
be
not be disappointed.
Very fun.
But yeah, I hope we take enough time to really recognize where we've come and what we've done, and just express to all of you how grateful we are for your continued support. I mean, it really not only keeps us going, but it really gives us a reason to do this. And
absolutely
inspires us and teaches us in all new ways. And I hope I say enough to you, Carl, just how grateful I am to be a part of this with
you. Oh, thanks, man. Likewise. Right back at you. You know, a track like this really kind of makes me feel like the 80s. It makes me kind of transported back into that time. You know, it's so 80s.
And what's kind of interesting is when we started the podcast, and for a lot of my life, I've been really kind of have my head in the past and kind of focusing on like, oh, I wish I could go back in time to when this type of music was being made, or just all these things in culture. You know, the 80s was so like colorful and fun and optimistic. But what's interesting is now I don't really feel the same way. Now I'm kind of, I have hope for the future and I'm kind of looking
forward.
But
it's still fun to revisit this era. You know, one of my favorite examples today, we're going to get to one later on too, just over the top 80s. You know, it's just like there was no other decade where that would have been written. And that's what I love to hear. I just love to hear those kind of little time capsule pieces, you know. So really fun stuff. It's absolutely crazy, but we're going to already move on to this week's track of the week. Kind of early in the playlist here. This is Super Mario Brothers 2. Now, it's pretty insane. We'll just say this now, but Mario Brothers 2 and 3 were both originally released in 1988. Mario Brothers 2 only came out in America originally because it was just Doki Doki Panic that they changed the characters. That's
right.
Why the game is so different. So the Lost Levels was only released in Japan. It was too hard for the American audience, so that's why they quickly and very, very quickly kind of made the U.S.
But
Mario 2.
But that's why, I mean, to people that grew up in either country, it's not like you got two sequels.
Exactly.
One
so
year.
We got Mario 2, and then like a week later, Japan got Mario 3.
Yeah, and then which we didn't get crazy. Super Mario Brothers 3
for
until
2 years later,
1990.
Yeah.
But so, then you had 1990 and 91 is when you got Mario World.
So we all got good stuff at different times. So this is the overworld from Super Mario Brothers 2. Definitely the best piece of music I think that was heard in 1988 for video games and maybe even other years. This is just an absolute classic composed by Koji Kondo. Enjoy.
I give up music forever.
You know what I love about this track is that intro feels like an outro when you hear it at the end. It's one of those great examples where you can't tell, is that the beginning of a loop or is this the end of a loop? It works so well in the beginning and in the end, and it's just great. And what I love is how much of this melody is constantly harmonized, and it's one of those things where when you take away the harmony, like, you can't really hear the song without that harmony. It's just like those are just a pair that need to be together.
Absolutely.
And the bass line is just so in the pocket.
Probably
outlining
my
chords.
Favorite bass line to anything ever.
Well, you know what? Here's what's so great about that bass line. One of the roles of it is outlining the chords, the you know, dominant seven chords and what have you, which is very important. It's a walking bass line, very traditional to jazz, what a jazz upright player would be playing. But
it's the
it's
most
not,
melodic thing
but
I've
but it's
ever
very
heard.
Melodic. It has these moments that feel like it's almost taking over the melody. It's something that you could sing. People could hum that bass line. Oh my gosh, it's so classic.
God, it's just, this piece is an absolute masterpiece.
It's a 10
Everything
out of 10.
About it is just magical and sacred. Like, this is what I was talking about with Sonic 2, where it's like, it's more than the sum of its parts, but the sum of its parts are incredible. I mean, each individual voice mm-hmm. is so phenomenal, and it goes beyond just the fact that, you know, composers were challenged to only write things with three voices. There's tons of NES music written with three voices that's functional. It's like, there's nothing else in the world quite like this piece of music.
Yeah, this
every
is a
single
master class.
Section gets a 10 out of 10. I mean, both, you know, the intro melody is so catchy and memorable and emotional and really brief, and the A section is perfect and the B section is perfect. The rhythms are interesting. It's syncopated, it's harmonized. It's
and I think
just
one
so
of the
phenomenal.
Reasons why the piece feels so comfortable and enjoyable, even though you're hearing these old, you know, these three channels on this old synthesizer, is that it feels full, and rhythmically and, you know, space-wise, it's very full, and you don't need to hear any other parts. There's not like, oh, I'm really missing a guitar or I'm missing this. Like, everything is exactly how it needs
right.
to be.
Well,
you know, the
to
bass
me, like,
is
in
covering
my mind,
so much.
When it comes to Koji Kondo, it's like the Super Mario Brothers theme is to the Star Wars theme what this overworld is to, like, the Superman theme.
Sure.
And then, like, Zelda is to that, like, the Indiana Jones theme, where it's like these amazing, wonderful pieces of music. But for some reason, you know, when people think of John Williams, mm-hmm. I think they tend to think of Star Wars and Indiana Jones as the big things. And
right.
for whatever reason, you know, Superman as a film hasn't been carried up through the generations.
So that's
as
why
much.
The music.
And
wasn't.
I think similarly, Mario 2 is kind of looked at as, like, you know, not
yeah,
a serious
I mean,
game, but the theme is one of his best creations.
I think it's better than the Mario 1 overworld. I'm just going to say that right now. I like it more. I think it's just absolutely perfect. It's just, I mean, not that the Mario 1 overworld isn't
I mean, they're
anything
so different,
less than perfect,
you know,
but
you,
yeah, this is definitely one of the best things that Koji Kondo has ever composed, I would say.
I mean,
say.
They're like primary colors. Like, the Mario 1 overworld is yellow and this is blue.
Synesthesia, folks. It's a real thing. We're now going to move on. We have so much more great music to play. So this is really fun. I love the soundtrack. Bionic Commando by the wonderful Junko Tamiya. She is absolutely one of the NES heavy hitters. She did some amazing work on the NES. This soundtrack is really awesome. Let's take a listen to Processing Plants from Bionic Commando. You guys are listening to Processing Plants from Bionic Commando, released in 88, composed by Junko Tamiya here. Gosh, this is just such a confident and very unique style composition that Junko Tamiya has. I would love to hear her come out of retirement and go back to this kind of thing.
Where are you, Junko?
Where
come
are
back.
You?
We miss you.
We do miss you. If there was ever some sort of Bionic Commando, you know, Kickstarter game or something, and they went back to the original composer.
I mean, yeah, there's Bionic Commando, but there's also
Street Fighter 2010
and Little Nemo the Dream Master.
All three of them just works of art. So yeah. Great.
Works of 8-bit pixel art.
I love Junko Tamiya. She's one of my absolute favorite NES composers.
Yeah, she's one of the classics, I think.
Man, she's so cool. Her music is just cool more than anything else. It's just very confident and cool. I just love the idea that it was composed by this. I mean, I don't know Junko Tamiya, but every picture I've seen from her, she just looks so nerdy in just those 80s glasses that she has on. This is like middle-aged, nerdy Japanese woman composing just the most badass music.
Well, what's kind of interesting when focusing on old video game music is so much of it is so similar musically. You know, there's a lot of... We've talked about this before. There's a very kind of unified sound when it comes to old video game music, that to really be connoisseurs of the medium, like, you're really noticing to sort of like fine details and not only how their music sounds but what specific attributes were. I mean, while that's cool, as a kid the thing that I think I just marveled at the most, which is like just that all of these games have such incredible soundtracks and they all sound like they're composed by the same person, and not in a derogatory way, like in an amazing, like, what were they all smoking that they all were able to kind of speak the same musical language?
Sure.
And it's something I still sort of marvel at, but you know, the more you listen to and the more you kind of live with this music from this time period, you start to notice the subtle differences between various composers.
Well, now we're going to move on to a wonderful soundtrack. It's a Konami adventure game that came out for the MSX2 on December 13th of 1988. It also came out that same month on the PC-88, but after that, it was years before other systems were to see this game. It's Snatcher. We're going to play the MSX2 version, and it was composed by Konami composers Masahiro Akariko and Masahiko Izumi. Wonderful soundtrack. We're going to play the theme of Snatcher Part 2, which is a very somber, kind of melancholy, beautiful piece. Let's take a listen to this from Snatcher. Piece of music. You guys are listening to the theme of Snatcher Part 2 from, obviously, Snatcher. This is the MSX2 version. very beautiful. What I love about this is it's very different from most kind of PC-88 MSX music that we hear. You know, we've had episodes featuring music from those systems before, and the part one theme of Snatcher is kind of more what you're kind of expecting. That
sure.
Japanese PC sound, where this is something that is a lot more emotional and I guess finely crafted.
Oh, it's just beautiful. It's very Japanese, and I think that's always a good thing. When is that not a good thing? But yeah, so emotional. And I really appreciate, I mean, again, we're talking about 1988, but video game music back then, when it can be so lyrical and so soloistic in terms of the melody is almost like a voice or a solo instrument.
Yeah.
There's so many sustained notes. I mean, it's kind of a bold choice to have a piece like this. When you think of a lot of old video game music, we usually think of fast-moving, plucky themes that move at a brisk pace. But something like this is really trying to simulate the emotion of a performance. It's very much like a ballad, and there's a lot of long, sustained notes. The melody is very minimal. It's the kind of thing that's hard to achieve when using synthesizers.
It is.
And it's something that I think needs to be praised.
That particular instrument choice of, to me, it sounds like they're going for a Rhodes.
Yeah,
I'm not sure what you
like
would
say. Yeah, like it's an electric piano.
But it is conveyed. That emotion is conveyed. And one of my favorite musical moments is the use of those triplets. Dun, 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 dun.
Right.
And the way that chord is kind of arpeggiated quickly feels performed, and that's what they were going for. They were going for a sound of a solo keyboard player playing this melody, and that's really what was conveyed, and it's very impressive they were able
to
do that.
And again, it's like, how cool is that, that our imaginations are mm-hmm. able to interpret all these synthetic elements as though they were being done by humans. I mean, we talked about how our ears are really sensitive to falseness, and we did that episode called The Human Touch. We talked a great deal about the uncanny valley
mm-hmm.
and how the closer you get to the real thing, the more perfect it needs to be.
Sure.
But yet on the other side of that is when you're really far away from the real thing, our imaginations do a great deal to fill in the gap
mm-hmm.
and it's almost impossible for us to not add or assign human
sure.
characteristics to the almost inhuman, which is one of the reasons why I think so much of us are so drawn to video game or computer music, because as human beings, I think we almost assign some kind of character or cuteness to it that may not even be present.
Well, that's
in it
the
innately.
Only reason why people would like it, because, like, objectively speaking, the tones
are very
not
limited.
Pleasing.
Yeah,
and they're not pleasing. Yeah, but yeah, we have to assign those human characters to it. So now we're gonna move on to that track I was talking about. It's so 80s. I absolutely love this though. This is from Power Drift, which was composed by the just super invaluable Sega composer Hiroshi Kawaguchi. Just an absolute classic. Did so many great arcade work. Arcade game Power Drift. This is Like the Wind, B Course. Enjoy. you guys are listening to Like the Wind, B-Chorus from the arcade game Power Drift by Sega composer Hiroshi Kawaguchi. Isn't this 80s?
Yeah, I take back what I said. I wish I could live in the 80s. Now I really want to go back.
Going to the arcade and hearing this music and playing this game and being so just entertained by really primitive graphics.
Well, and so excited by the future. You know, video games were so new. There's such a long ways to go in terms of making it look real, and mm-hmm. there's such an exciting journey of what will the next thing be, and what else can we do, and the sense of optimism. And
listen to this section here.
It's hard to almost relate to that now. Even
this kind of reminds me of Magical Sound Shower a little bit. Hiroshi Kawaguchi, he really had a good time with this arcade Sega music, because he would make these songs that were super long and would have all these different sections that wouldn't come until later on in the course. So, for example, this track, Like the Wind, is over 7 minutes long.
Right. Well, it's one of the fun things about when I think of arcade games, it's less about, like, I don't know, at least in my mind, it's less about, like, this long kind of journey, and it's more about how long can you last.
Sure.
The idea is
you kind of rewarded
coins.
Though he's like musically
so,
he's
yeah
rewarding
musically
you.
It's like you have these long pieces of music because you don't know how long the game is gonna go. Most players don't make it very long, but you know, the better player you are, the more music you get to hear and the more level you get to play. There's something about that may be a little gimmicky, but it's great for the purposes of having these excellent old soundtracks, because we're not confined to just these like 30-second looped pieces, you know?
Well, I'm really excited. You know, speaking of long-form loops, we're going to play a very interesting example from the Famicom. You know, same sound chip as the NES, right? This is from Dragon Quest III by the wonderful Koichi Sugiyama. It came out originally in the Famicom February of 1988. And this is probably one of the longest 8-bit Famicom or NES loops that I've ever heard, because it's not just its own piece of music that ends. It is a loop, but the loop is 3 minutes long. I can't think of another 8-bit track that has a loop that long. You know, a lot of times there'll be just a piece of music, maybe it's 4 or 5 minutes, but it's just constantly changing, right?
Sure.
Like a demo scene chiptune or whatever. This is the ending theme, so it's featured in the ending of Dragon Quest III, and let's play about 2 minutes of it maybe, and then we'll fade back down. A beautiful piece of music from Dragon Quest III. Enjoy. Thank you. You guys are listening to the ending theme from Dragon Quest III, composed by Koichi Sugiyama. Will, isn't this a beautiful piece of music? I think it's so expressive and so creative, and he just goes in so many different directions. And this is a brand new section you're hearing right here.
Yeah, it's really wonderful. I mean, the opening fanfare kind of sounds like Temple of Doom or something. It's really great, though. Everything about this is super splendid.
Brand new section right here, too.
There's a lot of beautiful things happening in the melody, and the harmonies are very kind of advanced. What's so great about Sugiyama is you feel like you're almost getting more than you bargained for, mm-hmm. in a great way, where it's almost like you have this sophisticated, classical film music mind working on NES music. And right. not to say that there isn't brilliant NES music out there, but this level of sophistication, but still kind of in the medium that we know and love, is just so wonderful and so welcome. And to me, what it does is kind of almost validate video game music as an art form, because it really is so similar. There are so many similarities between the two.
You know? I think is so good about the music of the series? I am pretty sure that Sugiyama didn't program the music.
Oh, no, yeah.
It doesn't make any sense that he would. So this is someone who's focusing on composing good melodies, the same that he would have done in film or TV or anything. And he's sending these tracks in the 80s. I don't know what, maybe on a cassette tape. I don't know what he's sending it. Maybe
the
sheet music.
Maybe writing it out
to the programmer to implement. And so each of them, and this nameless programmer that I don't know his name, unfortunately, who programmed it into the NES, both of them are just kind of focusing on what they do best. You know, Koichi Sugiyama is focusing on just composing the same way he composes any other medium, which is why the melodies are so strong. He doesn't have to waste his time being frustrated by the limitations of the NES. I wonder if he was specifically tasked in these early entries that it needs to be a three-part piece, mm-hmm. or if he wrote something four-part and they just kind of condensed it. It's hard to really know.
I mean, I imagine they would have been upfront with him about what the limitations are. I mean, I think that's sort of the advantage of having someone with a classical background.
Right.
But that's why, to me, that's one of the coolest situations ever, you know, to think about this sort of concert composer, this really esteemed guy.
But doesn't this feel
writing
full?
For NES? And I picture him like, right. I mean, it's something that, you know, I've dealt with a little bit before, because when we were working on Fireflower, Marty would send me, you know, mm-hmm. sheet music for this NES stuff. And
sure.
I remember thinking like, oh, it's so cool. Something so old and new coming together.
Yeah.
You know, the idiom of written music is really so old and has this tradition. And NES, even though it's out of date now, is such a modern thing.
Yeah.
There was something
in
so cool about that to me. But to think that that was happening, you know, way back in the 80s
it's
so
cool.
awesome.
It's a very cool thought. Well, now we're going to move on to a PC-88 game, a very awesome soundtrack, Ease 2. Really, really wonderful soundtrack. Better than Ease 1, I would argue. Some of my favorite melodies from the series are probably from this particular game. We're going to play the opening theme that you hear in the game. It's called To Make the End of Battle. It's just an absolute classic. I love this track so much. It's kind of one of those pieces, I don't know, Will, if you have these pieces, that are perpetually in my head, where so many times I'm at the grocery store in my car and I just hear this melody in my head. So let's take a listen to this from Ease 2, composed by Yuzo Koshiro. love this so much. This is just badass. You guys are listening to Make the End of Battle from Ease 2 for the PC-88, composed by Yuzo Koshiro. Gosh, this is just killer.
What's funny is listening to this now, it just sounds so much like Carl. Like, you and Yuzo Koshiro, I feel like, would get along so well. I feel like
we're kindred spirits.
Similar tastes and similar priorities.
I could not respect him more than I do. He's one of my absolute favorites. I love the... if you listen to the bass line in this track, it's so wonderful because a lot of it is just hitting the roots that, like, a rock bassist would play. But there's moments where he does the arpeggios with the melodies. Oh, God, it's so much fun. And the way that this track starts... I'll never forget the first time I listened to Ease 1 and 2. I was just so blown away. And this track starts, and it kind of sounds like Bomberman. It just has, like, this kind of chaotic all
sure,
over the place
yeah.
sound. And I'm just like...
A little bit of, like, an Arabian
mm-hmm.
kind
and
of
And I'm
flavor.
Like, okay, what's going on? And then... It's such an exciting moment.
Yeah. Well,
and
you get the classic 80s video game chord progression. Like mm-hmm. the Capcom, Konami, like when I think of, you know, classic Japanese video game music, this is the progression.
Absolutely.
You know?
God, you really can't beat this. This is just so good. Well, this is exciting. We're going to play more PC music here. It's a pretty big year for PC music. We have ZX Spectrum making an appearance today with Tim Fallon, the wonderful Tim Fallon. This is a game called LED Storm, and this is a really awesome track. It's the title screen to LED Storm for the ZX Spectrum. Enjoy. There's really no one else quite like Tim Fallon. I guess the closest thing is Jeff Fallon. Oh my gosh, I am a big fanboy.
Well, see, the thing is, behind all the flash and intricacy and kind of like busyness mm-hmm. of every Fallon composition is just this really innate musical genius,
yes.
you know? I mean, the fact that it's so technically marvelous, mm-hmm. that it sounds so good, and I guess the biggest thing about it is it's so almost virtuosic. Like, all these
yeah.
parts are really fast moving. If they were to be approximated by, like, real musicians, they'd be, like, gods.
Yeah.
But behind all that is a really wonderful sense of harmony, melody, rhythm, you know? I mean... These aren't just kind of like technicians
no.
pushing buttons and doing fancy tricks. It's like it really is using computer music to elevate the music.
Yeah,
you know,
to make something
creating,
that...
I mean, because it's so good, it almost is validating the medium and
well,
creating
yeah, this,
it in the same
this
time.
This wouldn't be possible with a real player. It wouldn't sound this good.
Because there's a lot of video game music that will maybe say, like, the definitive version is the 8-bit sound just because it's the first thing and there wasn't really other instruments in mind. But when you listen to Fallon music, no, that's like, oh no, this is the only time where
yeah.
this actually is as good as it could
exactly.
ever get. It would, anything with real instruments couldn't be as awesome. Like, all of these timbres are made to sound actually not pleasing, but just really fitting.
Yeah, I can't think of another example of composers other than the Fallon brothers where they're really validating this as an art form. I mean, like, this is in its own art form, you know? Like, this is something that works in a specific way that wouldn't work anywhere
else. Well, and I've thought about this before, but one of the cool things about being a composer in the modern era with technology and computers and everything is we're able to write music that's way more difficult than we can perform. I mean, that's always been happening, but the ability to kind of realize it, you know, I've been noticing, you know, when we do video game soundtracks, and we do a lot of kind of like throwback people asking us to write in an older style.
Yeah.
But when we're doing like a boss theme, you know, I can write this really intricate, fast kind of guitar line. And then when you put all the parts together, it sounds really badass and shredding, but like I would be totally lost to do that on a guitar. And like when I think about me as a person, I don't think of myself as someone who's super rhythmically oriented. But that's the cool thing about getting to be a composer as opposed to a performer, is you get to sort of step out of time and you get to almost be the god in your world of creating this music. And
yeah,
I imagine
that's
kind of like the appeal to people like the Fallons or a lot of, you know, Chris Hulsbeck, old you know, computer music composers.
You get to do all the crazy shreddy lines that you couldn't actually do in real life. Yeah.
Exactly.
So now we're going to move on to Super Mario Brothers 3. It's crazy that we get to play a track from 2 and 3 in one episode. This is the Athletic theme composed by Koji Kondo. Absolutely adore this piece of music. Let's take a listen. Obviously, a lot has been said by us and by others about how wonderful this track and the soundtrack are by Koji Kondo, but I think not enough has been said about the implementation of Super Mario Bros. 3. In some ways, the
couldn't
gold standard of NES. You know, the staccato versus the legato tones that he gets feels so expressive. The different timbres, the different types of attack that he gets, the use of the vibrato, everything is so expressive and lush and very colorful, and you're forgetting that you're listening to NES because you hear different instrument sounds. You truly do, you know, and I know when we say the word instrument, it's not really true on the NES, but he's making us believe that these are different instruments coming in there. It's so colorful.
Well, and it's another example of Koji Kondo's like inescapable brilliance, where everything is moving so fast, it's so intricately composed, and it's like a short loop that like you don't even have time to appreciate how brilliant like this phrase you heard was. I mean, I'm really into film music, but in a film, you'll have kind of a short theme and it'll have its presentation, and then you get a lot of, not filler, but just kind of functional score material. So you have this moment to just be like, wow, wasn't that six note melody so amazing? Mm-hmm. But what's great about video game music by Koji Kondo in this era is it's like every single solitary moment that you're listening to the soundtrack, it's so captivating and striking in every possible way that you don't even have that moment to just be like, wow, what a great melody that was, because you're into a new piece of material. And it also is made to sort of cradle the loop point and make it feel natural and inevitable. I mean, everything about this, I mean, once again, talking about the bass line, talking about the intricacies of the melody and harmony and how they interlock. Carl mentioned the implementation. What I so love about this soundtrack, and I think a lot of Mario music, is that it is trying to evoke genre oftentimes, especially with the earliest games. I mean, maybe Mario 2 isn't considered a Mario game officially, but I still, you still get connotations of genre. You know, Mario 1 was trying to do this kind of Latin sound. Mm-hmm. Mario 3, the overworld, is supposed to be more kind of like reggae. Mm-hmm. But this, to me, I don't know. There's like a
stride piano a little bit too.
Yeah, a little bit stride piano.
Maybe bluegrass.
Things of that era, but kind of bluegrass, but more just like almost like early country music or something. I picture this actually with like a fiddle because sure. the way it has that pitch bend.
I mean, there's that one section that I was really, like I was really enjoying, particularly that the difference between the staccato and the legato there is something that I never quite, I don't know, enjoyed the same way that I did today. There's well, just always something new to enjoy.
It's one of my favorite counter melodies. I mean, yeah.
Well, that's great.
Just a masterpiece. Koji well, Kondo, you forever will be a god to me.
You're a G. Now we're going to move on to another arcade game. This is Super C, also known as Super Contra. This original arcade version was released in, you guessed it, folks, 1988. So that's what we're going to play, the arcade version. Never played the arcade version of this game. It sounds way better than the arcade version of Contra. So I'll just make you guys, you know, quell your fears. Okay, so this was composed by Kazuki Moriwaka and Motowaki Furukawa. Let's take a listen to Area 2 from Super Contra. That is an awesome piece of music. You guys are listening to Area 2 from Super Contra for the arcade. I'm a really big fan of how they were able to combine very kind of ominous chords that just are very striking and make you feel like something is very wrong, but with the groove that is so feel good and again driving. It's almost the same groove of that Gradius 2 Burning Heat song.
Sure.
And I don't know, the combination of those two things, a chord progression in that groove that usually in most kinds of music would never go together.
Yeah, dude, I love the Contra music to both of these games. I think really just classic NES fun to me. I mean, I know these were arcade games first, but to me the NES versions are always like the gold standard.
Sure, I would agree with that. I mean, Super Contra definitely sounds way better here on the arcade. They did a much better job than the original Contra on the arcade, but yeah, Super Contra is really great. For some reason, it feels like definitely more of a lot, like underappreciated soundtrack than the first one.
Yeah, I imagine that's true. I mean, in general, I don't think people are always quick to think of the Contra games as like, oh, these examples of great video game music, but they really are.
So many good melodies. Well, we're going to play another great melody.
Just, you know, really rocking stuff. You know, even so if it's rocking. Not always like the melody is super lyrical or whatever, it's really doing its job of this kind of authentic driving badass kind of rock.
Well, let's keep that going because there's some more of that good example of rock on the NES. This is true NES here in 1988. Bad Dudes, what a great soundtrack.
Oh god, so, what a horrible game.
So good though, soundtrack wise we have Azusa Hara and Haruaki Yoshida. Let's take a listen to Stage 2 from Bad Dudes. We'll be right back. That is authentic rock on the NES. It's tough to beat that. That is stage two from Bad Dudes. Man, that is so good. You know, I really wish that this would have been in like a Mega Man game instead of this game, because then it would have lived on, because this is a wonderfully rocking, to me it sounds every bit as classic as anything in like Mega Man 3 or 4 or 5 or 6. It's so good.
This is another example of that melody that I guess just like every video game composer thinks they just get to borrow. Like, it's in this, it's in the Castlevania game, it's in that new Fire Emblem game as the main theme. And I think that was my problem with the Fire Emblem sound, Fire Emblem Fates, when I heard it, because I'm like, how can this be your main theme? I can think of like seven other video games
but
that
the defense
use like
the I'll
same
have,
melody.
The defense I'll have is that in at least this context in Fire Emblem, so different, like such a different context, that I think I don't have a problem with those both existing, because I think they're just so
different. Well, I mean,
this
came for, this owes nothing to anybody. I mean,
this is the first one.
I will not say that Bad Dudes is a masterpiece, but this is a great piece of music.
All
I
right,
really
folks.
Love that B section. Bum, ba-da, bum, 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 bum. Like, it's just the intricacy of those notes is really catchy.
All these arpeggios.
Yeah, that's really, you're right. Like, that deserved to be kind of a classic theme.
It does deserve
that. It's unfortunate that it doesn't really have that position in our minds.
So good. Okay, now let's move on to the last track of the day. This is definitely the most obscure game, but I remember when I first brought it in for an episode, it wasn't a sports game, it was maybe like more racing games or something. Will loved it so much, and it felt like this immediate like classic that we for some reason knew, but we didn't know until now. This is Famicom Grand Prix 2 3D Hot Rally, which came out for the Famicom Disk System in 1988, composed by Soyo Oka. Let's take a listen to the title theme. Not a lot of NES tracks in 9/8, but she makes it work. Wonderful piece of music. Wonderful playlist. Thanks so much, everybody, for joining us for our spotlight on the year 1988.
Well, this
happy
is a perfect,
to be born this year.
This is such a perfect track to end with, because it's so 80s, and not
it
necessarily
is.
In a video game way, but in like a harmony sense. I mean, those three-part harmonies are the most 80s thing. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, outside of video game music, when I think of 1980s musically, if you're not going to talk about production connotations, like the sound of that last section of those kind of moving harmonies, like that's the 80s to me.
It is.
Those kind of three part
and the last
movements
thing,
that are a little bit parallel, but sometimes subvert it.
Well, the last shout out I'll give is the playout track you guys should stick around for. Very 80s as well. It's for a PC-88 game called The Scheme, which is also composed by Yuzo Koshiro. It's called Challenging Tomorrow. It's a great classic track. To me, it feels very 80s and classic. I had a wonderful time today. Guys, I'm so excited for next week. You guys are really going to enjoy our season finale as we close out our 9th season. A couple little things to remind you at the end here. You can follow us on Twitter. You can like us on Facebook. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Head on over to our website, which is supermercadobros.com. You can find all of our episodes of the podcast, as well as our original music. Me and Will just released that double single of our SNES tunes we unveiled last week. We have solo albums coming soon and solo websites coming soon. So a lot of exciting things.
We also have a Patreon page where you
Correct.
Can support our show. Thanks to those of you that currently do.
Yeah, and the last way to support us is leaving us an iTunes review. That's a great way to for more people to discover the show. So thanks so much to everybody for listening. So many wonderful emails and comments. We love you guys. You're the best.
Yeah, I kind of want to give a shout out to an email that we got this past week. I mean, when this comes out, it might be a couple weeks ago.
Sure.
But it, I think it was definitely the nicest email that we've ever received, at least from my perspective. It was incredibly long and detailed, but just so personal and thoughtfelt. We both gave kind of our own thank yous to that person in public. But yeah, I mean,
those kind of things are what make the show, you know, worth doing for all these years.
But so to those of you that, you know, take the time to tell us what the show means to you, like, I don't know, I can't explain how grateful I am
that it means
you
even a lot to listen us.
But that you would take the time to do that. So thank you and we'll be with you next week
for the finale. My name is Carl Brueggemann
and I'm his brother Will Brueggemann. Have a great week, everybody.
Peace out.